The SEC is still trying to clean up the GameStop mess. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishor, in for David Brancaccio. Remember that whole GameStop saga a couple years ago? Retail investors fought with hedge funds and short sellers over the GameStop share price? Well, the Securities and Exchange Commission is expected to adopt a rule today to deal with a problem highlighted by that saga, that it sometimes took too long for a stock trade order to be executed after it was placed. So the SEC is looking into shortening that lag. Marketplace's Nova Safo explains.
With the new SEC rule, most stock trades would have to be executed one business day after they're initiated, a reduction from the current two-day requirement. Regulators have looked into the frenzied trading in GameStop shares 2 years ago and found that the longer it took to settle a transaction, the higher the likelihood of default. To guard against such risk, clearinghouses require margin deposits, cash, from brokerage firms. In January of 2021, as GameStop's stock value rose, so did retail brokerages' margin deposit requirements. In response, Robinhood and others briefly restricted trading in GameStop shares, angering customers and lawmakers in Washington. The SEC says speeding up trades will reduce these kinds of disruptions. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Over the past 6 months, the price of natural gas has fallen by more than half. That's been a blow to natural gas producers after a very profitable year following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And right now, natural gas producers are particularly exposed to any further slide in prices. Why is that? Here's Marketplace's Lily Jamali.
Players in the energy industry are used to prices being volatile. To protect themselves, they hedge. Think of hedging like buying insurance against major price swings. But after a blockbuster year, producers are hedging less. According to the consultancy Energy Aspects, only about 36% of 2023 natural gas production has been hedged, compared with 52% last year. Clark Williams Derry is with the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis.
I think a lot of gas producers were expecting prices to remain elevated throughout 2023. But what they've seen is an unexpected price collapse.
With less hedging, analysts say natural gas producers are more exposed if prices keep declining. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
All right, let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up less than a tenth of a percent. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 2 to 4 tenths percent range, with the Dow future down 65 points. The yield on the 10-year Treasury is 3.742%. This summer marks 54 years since the first moon landing, and governments and private companies have their sights set on returning. In fact, three private companies are racing to be the first to land a commercial spacecraft on the moon, though with no passengers or crew. And it'll happen this spring, if all goes according to plan. One of them is already in the air. But private companies arriving on the lunar surface raises questions around the legal framework for private space exploration and use of lunar resources. Tom Standage is the author of Which Firm Will Win the New Moon Race, a recent article in The Economist magazine. He joins us now. Hi, Tom.
Hello, good to be here.
So who are these companies trying to land on the moon this year, and why are they doing it?
One of them is a Japanese company called iSpace, and its mission, called Hakuto R, is actually already on its way. It launched in December, but it's taking a rather roundabout way of getting to the moon, if you can believe it. And then there are two American companies called Intuitive Machines and Astrobotic, and they are both hoping to launch in the next few months.
Getting to the moon requires money. What's the market incentive to go there?
So the American ones, they are funded under a NASA program called CLPS, which stands for Commercial Lunar Payload Services. So rather than building a whole load of its own probes, its own landers, it is essentially saying, we would like to send stuff to the moon. Who would build a lander? And then whoever builds the lander buys a launch service from a company like SpaceX or someone else. There's an open market in that. So essentially, there is this sort of buy a slot on a machine. And so NASA has seeded the market for these two American landers by saying, we will buy this many slots, this much payload mass on your landers. They then put together this whole mission where they build the lander with the money they've taken from NASA, but they also take money from other people who want to send stuff to the moon. And they then put together this mission. So the idea is that we're starting to move to more of a sort of marketplace in lunar landing services.
So these companies are basically taking stuff to the moon. That's how they're making money or hope to make money. How far away are we, do you think, from extracting economic value from the moon?
So there's clearly a commercial market in sending stuff into orbit. And that's because there's lots of things you can do in orbit that actually make sense. You can put up satellites to do things like broadcast radio and TV or internet like SpaceX does with Starlink. There's useful things you can do in orbit that you can make money from. It's not at all clear what you can make money from by sending stuff to the moon, because legally, even if there was like bars of gold lying around on the moon, it's not clear what the legal situation is with bringing resources back or even using resources in situ. So in theory, there could be a commercial market in the future for things like tourism, but we still have this big gray area.
There is this thing called the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, basically says no country can claim sovereignty over the moon. But what about companies or companies, you know, backed by governments?
We don't really know. And so America is trying to sort of update this and has this new set, the Artemis Accords, which is an attempt to update things so that you can start to exploit resources. But the trouble is that the Artemis Accords have been rejected by China and Russia. And then there's a rival thing that was set up in the 1980s by a whole load of other countries, but America refused to sign that one. So that's the challenge, that there isn't a sort of prevailing legal theory.
Tom Standage is a deputy editor at The Economist and is the author of Which Firm Will Win the Moon Race? Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.